This is the Climb to Space.
Hello and welcome to the Decline to State Internet Radio Stream, the show in which we get together to discuss the ups and downs of life outside the Matrix. Decline to State is proud to bring you in a surprisingly few netcasts in which the hosts do not support acts of aggression against you. You can find us on the web at declinefm.com, where you find a link to the live chat. Live chat is your go-to way with other to interact with other listeners or bring up points for discussion on the show. Today we have a straight-talking guest coming on directly from another production, who I'll introduce just in just a moment. And I'm Ronald McPaul, your beacon of freedom in the heart of the Silicon Valley. I'm joined by my handsome co-casters, and I'll let them go around the horn and introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Codename Eternal.
Wrong opinion here, coming to you from the Rust Belt.
And just for any new listeners and our guests joining us today, we usually use our Reddit handles to introduce ourselves because that is where this show originates from.
So, where Ron,
introduce our wonderful guest today?
Absolutely. I'm pleased to announce that we have the popular blogger, notorious tax protester, and according to Wikipedia, IRS Section 816 argument proponent. On the show with us, content created by Larkin Rose, and content created by Larkin Rose can be found at larkinrose.com, and that's Larkin spelled with an E, L-A-R-K-E-N, or on Larkin Rose's channel on YouTube. Larkin has a way of driving home points very clearly and very earnestly, and we welcome him warmly. Happy 2013, Larkin.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure having you here.
And so you came from, I understand, Eternal said you came from doing another show. Was this with some other people, or you're doing your own podcast?
No, I was on a show with somebody else with some recovering statists, so I had to be sort of gentle with them.
Oh, those poor people.
It's a situation. Yeah, it's a situation you're somewhat familiar with yourself. I've kept up with most of your YouTube videos. I've watched them from time to time, and I remember that you mentioned sometime in the past that you came to statelessness as a result of some serious introspection.
Yeah. I was sort of raised as, you know, conservative, constitutionalist, a little bit libertarian leaning, and basically, my wife and I just sort of corrupted each other all the way off the political spectrum by thinking about things and trying to be consistent. And really, if all you have to do to get from statism to voluntarism, or whatever term you want to use for it, is look inside your own head and whittle away the inconsistencies and the contradictions, and eventually you'll find that the entire notion of government and authority just kind of disappears, and then you just have a big planet with a bunch of people on it. And we're all just people, no masters and no slaves. And for me, it was a very, you know, it was a slow, this was years and years for me to basically accept the bleeding obvious. Because as I often say now, most of what I do is explain things that every fifth grader knows instinctively, but is trained out of us over the years. So the truth is painfully simple. And it took me years to come to realize the painfully simple truth, because of the authoritarian indoctrination that I received, that almost everybody I know received. And so it was fun to have my wife Tessa there with me going through the process, and we would sort of each nudge each other in the direction of, well, what about this? And how can you justify taxing for the military if you can't justify taxing for this? And, well, let's make it voluntary. And eventually the entire notion of a ruling class just kind of falls apart and disappears. And okay, well, there, now we're consistent, and golly, we're anarchists. Ah, what happened?
That's amazing you were able to do it together. I mean, I hadn't heard that story, but I know there's we've had people when we were, you know, taking callers more frequently, would call into the show and say, you know, what do I do about my girlfriend? It's usually one person makes the leap, and then you kind of have to like drag somebody else kicking and screaming, right, or try to encourage them, or you have that awkward conversation.
Right. I totally lucked out in that degree. I mean, I've had tons and tons of people tell me their sad stories about them waking up and having a, you know, it's usually the guy wants to be a troublemaker and pick a fight, and the woman wants security, and so dragging him back. But in my case, there was none of that. I can't even say which one of us cross the line first. We just, you know, and there's still little things we disagree about, but when it comes to politics, we sort of went through that march down the road towards eliminating what's immoral, the initiation of force. And for a long time, I had the, you know, the contradiction in my head, I think we both did, of, well, we just need a government that just defends us. And then it took me a while to realize if we have that, it isn't government anymore. It's like, we need a carjacker that only protects people from people who steal cars. Well, that's nice, but it's not a carjacker anymore. It's just a guy protecting you. And if you take government and make it purely defensive and moral, it isn't government anymore. It's not a ruling class. So, and I'm a little bit ashamed that it took us years to figure that out. But I'm thrilled to see how many people are figuring it out in, you know, a week or something. It's almost every day now that I get a message from somebody saying they, like, they read my book, The Most Dangerous Superstition, or they read some other stuff, or and in a very short period of time, their entire view of reality and society was completely inside out and upside down. And it always stuns me because I'm thinking, well, I must be a moron. It took me like 5 stinking years to get through the process. And now tons of people are doing it in a, you know, a few days or a week or a month or whatever. And so it's turning into just an avalanche of people figuring this out really, really fast compared to what I did. And it's people don't go back. I suspect that's, you know, that's my experience. And you can tell me if it's yours. People don't go back to worshiping the state after they figure out reality. So this is a one-way avalanche. And eventually it's really, I think eventually the whole world is going to understand the idea of government is completely incompatible with humanity and morality. They don't fit. They can't be in the same universe. So let's choose being good instead of being slaves.
I can't agree more. And it's funny, you were to describe your own, path to redemption, as I'll call it. And it pretty much, you know, you took a little longer than I did, but it's the exact same thing. You know, I didn't have a wife, and I'm married, but I grew up, and one of our co-hosts, not on tonight, but is one of my close friends for a very long time, and we would bounce ideas off each other and try to make things work. You know, we went from conservatives, constitutional conservative, to libertarian status, to, okay, well, I've given up. I'm not even going to defend the thing anymore. And yeah, so I definitely can say it helps having another person, you know, to go on the journey with you. You know, we basically did the same thing you did, I guess, but with less sex.
I would can't know that for sure. Were you there?
You can't go anarchist without sex.
Not saying anything for my
a wise decision.
But there seems to be, I mean, I don't want to sound too mystical and weird, but it really seems like something's happening that's almost magic. Like it's an idea that suddenly people are able to think about. I mean, I've been saying the same things now for 16 years. I mean, the process I went through was pretty dang long ago. And I've been saying the same thing for 16 years. And for the first 10 of that, like 3 people would pay attention. And suddenly there's this giant accelerating wave of people able to think about it. And to me, I mean, I talk about the philosophy and the morality and all that, but I've sort of accidentally gotten a bit of an education in human psychology, because you try to explain somebody out of a paradigm, a false assumption they have, and you see all the weird things the human brain does to hang on to whatever it already believes. And it goes in denial and makes up completely goofy logic and then gets angry and then gets sad and then they plug their ears and run the other way. And so a lot of what I've been learning isn't even about the actual issue, which is pretty darn simple. It's about trying to get people so they're capable of thinking about it, because it really is going against a religious faith. The belief in government is a faith. It's a religion that's pounded into people's heads. Oh, there are these overlords and they rule us, and to disobey their law is a sin, and yada, yada, yada. And to get out of that really is a deprogramming, and people respond in really weird, irrational ways because they didn't come to their beliefs by thinking, by figuring things out. They got indoctrinated into it. And to try to get them out of it, just like trying to get me out of it, is this uncomfortable, awkward, weird thing of trying to make somebody dare to think about things that he was taught to take on faith that don't actually make any sense. But I think I see this huge wave of this happening, and it really seems to me like society, I don't know how else to say this, it's an idea that society is suddenly capable of thinking about when it wasn't 10 years ago. And I don't know why, but it really seems like there's this strange phenomenon that when enough people understand something, suddenly other people can start talking about it. And as soon as somebody can talk about it and think about it, I say, well, that's fine. I know where you're going to end up. I'm not going to push you and rush you and scream at you. As soon as I see somebody, you know, when their brain is addressing it, instead of their mythology and their superstitions and their assumptions, when they're actually thinking about it, I don't know anybody who started on that road and not ended up at the same place. So as soon as I see somebody in thought process where they're saying, okay, yeah, nobody has the right to initiate violence, so that kind of makes us all equal. But how do we, and after that, it's just sort of an academic exercise. But that first step is the thing. I still don't know why I took that first step, and I still don't know what makes anybody else take it. Because I've seen people who sound rational and they're very educated who just cannot look at their political beliefs in any sort of objective way, at their philosophical assumptions, to completely viciously respond to just the politest invitation to reconsider their assumptions. And then some of them just one day will take the step. And I don't know why. It's like a switch goes off in their head. And instead of a switch going off in the head once every once in a while, now it's happening in the thousands. And I don't know why, but I'm thrilled to see it.
I have a suggestion as to why, and it may not be the only reason, but I think it's a more broad-reaching answer, and that is I think people are starting to reconsider the way society works because their needs aren't being met, or they don't perceive them to having been met at some point in time. I'll give an example. I was listening to a local talk radio station today on the way home from work, and I tune in from time to time just to kind of take a pulse on the opinions of that audience. It leans somewhat more conservative. But more and more, I'm hearing people calling in and saying, I'm sick of the Republicans, I'm sick of the Democrats, I'm sick of the government, they don't do anything, they just rip us off all the time, I'm done, I'm not doing politics anymore, I'm just going to try to find a way to live my life and keep the government as far away as I can. So I almost want to say it's something like a matter of market forces, really. When people see that the state really isn't meeting up to their demands, or never has been to begin with, they start looking for a different way to fulfill their needs. And I think voluntarism and all the academia behind it, you know, like economics with anarcho-capitalism, things like that, provide a theory and a framework for people to build a society that can possibly fulfill the needs that aren't being fulfilled by a state society.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely a huge factor is ironically, the more vicious and destructive government gets, the more people it pushes into figuring out, hey, let's not do that. It doesn't help us. It doesn't help society. So I definitely think that's a big factor. I don't think it actually explains the whole thing. And a really depressing example I like to use is in Nazi Germany, the primary opposition to the Nazi Party was the communists, another flavor of giant authoritarian control freakism. And it's so depressing to me that given that level of injustice and oppression and evil, that's all they could come up with. Like, that's the extent of the paradigm shift these people were capable of, is let's have a slightly different flavor of authoritarian totalitarianism. And so even when there's been just vicious mass murder, most people still don't question the idea of government. They just think, oh, we got the wrong guy on the throne. We need a totally different guy on the throne. But the idea that there shouldn't be a throne, even, you know, for thousands of years throughout history, as nasty as things got, still hardly anybody has been able to think maybe there shouldn't be a throne. And now people are able to think about that. And it's amazing.
You mentioned,
go ahead.
I just want to to interrupt a little quick, since you mentioned Throne, I don't want to misattribute the video. You made the video, is it If You Were King? Is that correct?
Yeah, If You Were King. Right. That's what
I love that video. It's really good. And you just mentioned Throne, so it came
yeah, my and head. That's it's one of, I mean, mostly what I do in my videos is just pick one little idea to mess with people's assumptions, to mess with their paradigm. And it's usually just thinking up some little thing to stick in their head, like, well, if you were in charge, everything would be great, right? And then it goes, as you know, it goes through why, no, it actually wouldn't be great. And you wouldn't help society and you wouldn't fix everything. You would either do nothing or become a tyrant, and with doing nothing being a drastic improvement over doing anything else. But just the ability of people to start thinking in the direction of, the Gandalf direction. If I had the Ring of Power, I would destroy it. I don't want it. I don't want to rule the world. I couldn't fix the world. I would just mess it up. You know, whatever good intentions I would have, they would get screwed up and I'd be an evil psycho.
I like the Lord of the Rings reference there, just because, it's somebody who read Lord of the Rings way back, when I was much younger. I'm just going to totally shift the conversation to Lord of the Rings now, because it's one of the best pieces of anarchist propaganda ever written. The best. Yep. It's so good.
I was suspicious for years, because the Ring of Power is just the brilliant analogy. And there's so many brilliant lines where he says, the evil, nasty guy Sauron, the one advantage we have is it would never occur to him that we would try to get the ring to not use it. It's the one thing he would never imagine, because he could not fathom getting hold of that power and not using it. And that's what humanity needs, is to figure out we need to not try to rule each other, not fight over, I get the throne, no, I get the throne, but say, how about none of us get the throne? I run my life, you run yours. And a thing I suspected for years and years was that Tolkien was basically a closet anarchist. And then somebody sent me a quote from a letter that he sent to, I think, his nephew, in which he openly said, when it comes to politics, I'm becoming more and more an anarchist, as in nobody should be in control. And for him to say that, I was like, yes, I knew it, because I could totally tell from the story. But it was only like last year that somebody quoted that, him admitting, I think it was to his nephew, that he had figured out that government is totally bogus and there shouldn't be such a thing. But yeah, that analogy in Lord of the Rings is so, so dead on and so powerful and so obvious too. It's funny that everybody doesn't figure it out, but hey, if they watch the movie and get, wow, this is what happens if you get power. Yeah, no kidding. Read a newspaper, you learn the same thing.
Yeah, the books are really good, and the movies are really good too. And I offer a challenge to any of our listeners. We'll name drop you if you can tell us you did this. Watch all three extended editions in one sitting. That's the challenge.
I own all three extended editions, but I haven't. I've done it in two. Sorry, that's the best.
I did it in one earlier this year. That was long day.
Have you guys?
Did
checked
you at least
out?
Take bathroom breaks or something?
No bathroom breaks.
No, you get one of those chairs that has the toilet built in. Don't even have to get up.
I think that's enough of that.
getting away from a little bit from the potty stuff is I get a similar read too, in which he may already be well out of the closet, on the Game of Thrones guy as well. I even forget his name, but the anarchist or voluntarist type overtones with that too are very heartwarming, considering how popular that stuff is. It's on the top of the Reddit community, which we spawn out of frequently, and not just our little neck of the woods.
Yeah, and it sneaks through in the culture, and sometimes it isn't sneaking very much. I mean, V for Vendetta, it just amazed me that a mainstream huge Hollywood movie would come out.
Love that movie.
With having the hero be a lawless anarchist criminal. And it's not quite that cut and dried, but it's, to have the good guy be resisting empire entirely. Like, it wasn't, so put me in charge. It just, of course, the Wachowski brothers also did The Matrix, which is a pretty big shocker for people. And I think even if people, because most people don't think about their belief systems, they just sort of have it. It was drilled into their heads and it just sort of, it hugely distorts how they think, but they don't really think about it. So there's a lot of people that I refer to as default anarchists who they know something's completely bogus with the way society is now. They know the game is rigged. They just sort of feel like that's stupid. And when they can see it philosophically laid out, they go, yeah, I knew that. Well, I sort of knew that.
Like, it's like instantaneous. Yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah, but it fills in all the gaps. And now, yeah, duh, of course. So there's a lot of people out there who understand it, who haven't like philosophically put it into a big picture, but they instinctively know that the game is just a giant, evil, destructive, antisocial joke. And so it takes hardly anything to nudge them over the edge into realizing, oh yeah, the whole game of government, the whole game of politics is just a fight over who gets the club to beat everybody else over the head, and that's no good. So there are a lot of people that, and who knows how much influence things like The Matrix and V for Vendetta and Lord of the Rings have actually had to push people in that direction, even if it doesn't lay it out philosophically. When they hear it explained that way, they say, oh, of course, that all fits together and that matches with what I already instinctively knew and maybe just didn't know how to put into words or whatever. So there's a lot of young people that fit in that category. You know, I'm a geezer. I'm 44 now. There's a heck of a lot of people younger than me.
Oh my God.
I'm so old, one foot in the grave, who it takes hardly anything to nudge them over the edge into, yeah, government's bogus. It can't not be bogus. It's not just this one's pretty bad. It's the idea is inherently completely illegitimate. And it's fun to meet somebody who can figure that out in a day, instead of struggling with it for a decade and then figuring it out.
Well, we all have help. I mean, a lot of it's because you've been putting videos and other people out for so much time. It kind of seems to me like it's hard to put a finger on, I agree, like what it is that turning tide or why it happens in bigger numbers, but it just seems like the internet spells dunzo for the state. There's so much information and it's so much freedom of it that it's kind of hard to resist, I guess. I mean, to me, it seems like that has a big effect.
Well, when would you get it before the internet? I that's my question. Like, if you were around, you know, how we would possibly get a hear of these ideas in 1970, for instance. Like, what is your source of information? The newspaper, the TV, and radio?
Yeah, there's like
books.
Nothing back there.
The only way. It's got, yeah, it's, I mean, there, books.
There have some people, you know, been people writing, you know, Albert J. Nock, who wrote Our Enemy, the State. He wrote that 12 gazillion years ago. Lysander Spooner and Frederick Bastiat, and who wrote things just totally, you know, yanking apart the entire mythology underlying government. Although some of them didn't even say they were anarchists. They just sort of said, well, so we have to have government that only does what we're allowed to do. Well, okay, but that's not government anymore. So there are books out there, but yeah, who the heck, you know, bothers to go read philosophy books in their spare time unless they're already interested in it? So yeah, the internet obviously is this gigantic leap forward, but there's still that weird phenomenon of when people dare to think about it and when they don't. And to me, one of the most interesting things to me is my parents, both of them actually passed away in the last few years. They were in their 80s when they finally gave up statism, and which just stuns me because, you know, the thing of your belief system, it gets more and more solidified inside your head. The last thing you want to do is reboot your whole view of reality, you know, having lived however many decades. But I helped nudge them over the edge, and they were still clinging on a little bit. But one of my favorite things that I ever heard is, and I get this secondhand from my mother, who said that, this is back when they were both alive, somebody called up asking for donations. They used to contribute to the Republican Party, and my dad answered, and she only heard his side of the conversation, but they were asking for money, and like, we got to defeat these Democrats, so blah, 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 blah. Do you want to give? And he said, no. Well, are you a Republican? No. Well, what are you? I'm an anarchist. Click. So I got that from my mom, and I was so proud to hear, yes, I got my dad to say he was an anarchist, you know, having been a conservative for 80 years. So
but he still got there. I mean, that's, yeah, still, he got that's there. Still count. I mean, that is, yeah, not easy to get your brain's neurons that have these, that are very well entrenched at that point to turn. I mean,
right.
I think
the pathways have been the same for decades and decades, but
yeah,
I think
exactly.
This is an idea whose time has come. I mean, it's a totally cliche thing to say, but I think it's totally true. It's a thing that it's an idea that's just suddenly spreading because people are able to talk about it. To me, one of the funniest things is, you know, not that many years ago, if I'd get in a debate with a minarchist, they were so condescending and so insulting. That's just ridiculous to have no government. There'd be chaos. That's just, come on, that's absurd. And now I get in debates and they're all apologetic. And they're like saying, well, I'm not quite to the point where I've given up government. But I think maybe it's and I notice it all the time. And it's so funny that they're like, and some of them come right out and say, I'm not there yet. Like they use the word yet as if they know darn well they're going to end up there. But they're clinging on to their statism for, you know, in desperation. And you can hear it in the way they talk when they actually say, well, I haven't completely given up the belief in government yet. But, you know, who says that unless they think they're going to soon?
So Larkin, even you do a decent number of live speaking events. Does this happen like in question and answer sessions after that or
yeah, you know, and in discussions? I mean, I'll talk to one person or 100 people or 300, you know, however many people listen to me blab. And sometimes it'll be in a discussion in an open discussion, and sometimes it'll be one on one, whether by email or in person or whatever, because often, you know, I'll give a 40-minute talk and then I'll sit there for 3 hours afterwards talking to people, hanging around afterwards. And that's when some of the most interesting stuff comes out, where it's sort of private and casual and people dare to sort of tell their stories and what they really think. Because, you know, if people are in a debate, they're in combat mode. Nobody goes into a debate thinking, in the middle of this, I'm totally going to change my mind and agree with the other guy. You know, that's not the mindset people go into in a debate. One of the funniest things is I was invited to give a talk at a local, like, conservative, politically active group. And I said, oops, do you know what I think? Like, why are you inviting me to this? And the person said, yeah, I know what you think. And they totally need to be nudged pretty hard. And so I went and gave a talk about that. And it was so funny and so sad because the guy who heads it, I gave my talk and he introduced me. He was all nice. And at the end, he said, literally, he said to this political action group, he said, we're meeting next week, but I don't know why. and just openly said, I've been wasting my life for years. Like, we've been doing this political action. It doesn't do anything. It reinforces the and so in one shot, he just openly admitted in front of a bunch of people, my whole assumption of how to fix society just flew out the window. And that doesn't happen very often, but that was so funny for me that he just said, I don't know why we're getting back together. So it's that's happening more and more.
Yeah. Go ahead. Do you have any events coming up that you want to get a plug in for while we're on the topic?
Yeah, let us know what's up next.
There's actually none scheduled at the moment. In April, there's a big thing happening in New York with a bunch of people. I don't even know the name of it. That shows how organized and competent I am. I did a bunch recently. I just did Libertopia. And next June is Porkfest. But right now, there's sort of a lull between talking engagements other than radio stuff and making
videos. Yeah, well, you did do that radio, you know, in some of your recent YouTube videos, you have the Am I Dangerous, which I take as an open letter to your local law enforcement. Is that something you expect to hear a response from the sheriff's department from?
I'm pretty sure hell will freeze over before they say anything about it. Yeah, that was the local sheriff's department. I don't want to say how I found out, but I know that they have me marked as, watch out, this guy might be dangerous. And so I sent him a letter that said, you know, just why don't you find out what I say instead of deciding that you should be, you know, ready to blow my head off at a moment's notice. But no, they're you know, I would be completely stunned. I would die of a heart attack. Maybe if I say that, they'll respond. I would die of a heart attack if they actually responded and said, yeah, let's talk about this. Because they need to view people like us as dangerous, antisocial, horrible people, because we're out there saying we should interact nonviolently. Like, we can't have that. That would be chaos and mayhem. So
we're all wearing tin hats too. I have to announce that sometimes before I talk about kind of what my perspective on the world is. That okay, I'm putting my tinfoil hat on now.
The tinfoil hat perspective. Yeah. So they have to. It's interesting to study what they think we are. And they actually have to go really far out of their way to not find out what we actually are and what we actually believe and what we advocate. Because they have to, like, if they ever admit in their heads that we're the people saying, hey, everybody should get along nonviolently, and they're the ones saying, let's violently impose the will of the politicians on everybody, you know, if they ever acknowledge that as the reality, they're going to say, whoops, we're the bad guys, let's stop doing this. So they have to imagine, you know, one way or another, they have to imagine us as the bad guy and the threat to society. And the mental gymnastics they have to do to try to paint people saying, don't initiate violence against anybody, to try to paint that as some dangerous thing that's threatening the country. It's just, it's a weird thing to watch.
You just
watch.
Don't care about children. You just want old people to die in the streets.
Children,
I like
to
having
starve.
Roads.
Right. You don't want a massive extortion racket because you want little kids to starve and nobody to have a road.
It really is bizarre, though, isn't it? Because, like, I'm pretty sure you heard about this, but not too long ago, the Southern Poverty Law Center attempted to connect anarcho-capitalism with, like, the Patriot/militia movement.
Right.
Which I thought was hilariously wrong. Right. We're legit now, everyone. Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yep, I made the
list. How do you feel about that?
That's outstanding. I'm thrilled that those control freak lunatics were nice enough to put my name on the list of people. And I was on there with like Lou Rockwell and I forget who else.
Yeah.
It's
you
so,
should print
but
that
you
out
can
and put it in a frame. It's a badge of honor. It's like a purple heart for ANCAPs.
But you see, well, in that, I was going to say you can see their mentality, but they're a bunch of propagandist liars. Like the local cops or something, I think they have to lie to themselves, whereas Southern Poverty Law Center are just fascist propagandists. I mean, they're lying through their teeth and they know it. That's their agenda. So it's sort of a different phenomenon when somebody is trying to demonize you and when somebody just sort of imagines that, well, you don't believe what I believe, so you must be wrong and bad and scary. And so I think a lot of people, well-intentioned people, imagine that we must be scary. Those voluntarists, they want everybody to have machine guns or something. They want something scary. It can't just be they want people to get along and be peaceful, because that's not scary. We have to make something scary out of it. And to watch people try to take the only peaceful moral philosophy in the world and characterize it as scary and dangerous, it's just sort of, it's almost funny sometimes. It would be more funny if they didn't have tons of power and weren't extorting and terrorizing millions of people. But it's still sort of funny watching them try to make it evil and dangerous and malicious to say, how about if we all get along without violence?
I mean, especially when the word is voluntarism rather than anarchism.
Voluntarism. We want people to interact voluntarily. How can you, like, well, we don't. We want people to interact violently. Oh, wait a minute. We don't want to say that. So they use these bizarre terms. Well, you have to think of the common good and the will of the people and the collective and all this bogus terminology that they try to pile on top of brute violence to make it look prettier. But when it comes, you know, when it comes down to it, how do you demonize somebody who says, how about if nobody attacks anybody else? But they still try. And they sort of have to for their own mentality. They have to find a way to imagine us to be dangerous and scary and you know, a threat to humanity because we're saying, let's get along and like do everything voluntarily.
So I have a question for you. I know you've had far more interaction with cops than we probably have. So do you find that your local policemen, are they more amicable towards the ideas than they used to be? Do you find that you get to them sometimes? Are there any good apples among the sea of bad apples? Or is it pretty much just avoid them at all costs? They're bad people.
Like meeting them in person when they're in the mode of being enforcers of the beast called authority, they're complete idiots. They don't know how to think. They have no morality. They're stupid robots. I have yet to see any exception to that when they're in the mode of being the arm of the law. However, when they're just having a discussion, some of them can actually start to sound reasonable and can start to think about things and can start to wake up, basically. I'm actually about to do a video interview with somebody who's a U.S. Marine, who's still a U.S. Marine, and who's also a voluntarist now.
Wow.
And credits me to a large degree of making that happen. So I think we'll do it anonymously until he's not a Marine anymore, which will be in a few months.
Smart move.
So there are some people waking up who have been enforcers for the beast called government. But I think when they're actually in the setting of, hi, I'm the guy with the badge and I'm not even a human being. Morality doesn't apply to me because I'm an agent of the mythical god called the government. You will do as I say or you get tased. You know, their ability to think then is basically zero in my experience. But when they're not in that mode, some of them, it isn't very many, because I think the job very much attracts people who don't want to think about things. They want to be order obeyers and to get power out of that. But there are exceptions, and exceptions appear where people dare to think about things and dare to say, well, I think that, like, I'm against this law, but I have to enforce it. And I say, wait, what do you mean you have to? You know it's immoral, but you have to do it anyway? Explain that to me. Golly, I just got to do the wrong thing. And so some of them can think about it and talk about it. And you know, I think it's a lot smaller percentage than the general public, because basically, if your job is to initiate violence against people on a daily basis, you're going to try pretty hard to not recognize that it's bad to initiate violence against people on a daily basis. Like, they have a huge psychological investment in what they are. So they'll tell themselves that, yeah, the guy I just caught with a joint that is going to be put in a cage, he had it coming. He brought it on himself. Somehow he's the bad guy. He was there smoking a joint, and then I came and threw him in a cage. But for some reason, he's the bad guy. I'm sure of it. And so they'll do all sorts of mental gymnastics to justify their own fascism. But sometimes outside of that setting, they can actually think and talk about things. I actually think it's more true of soldiers than of cops. I know a lot of people who are ex-soldiers or still in the military who are kind of sliding in this direction pretty darn fast. And which is sort of amazing to me. I didn't expect that ahead of time. But I mean, the fact that the military gave so much support to Ron Paul, who's obviously a statist, but it's in the direction of, you know, maybe we shouldn't be doing warmongering. To have to have the warmongers or the agents of the warmongers saying, let's not do warmongering anymore, is a pretty good sign that there may be a sort of awakening of humanity in there. And a lot of...
Go ahead. I was gonna say, speaking of Ron Paul, did you ever listen to his the farewell speech, the last speech he gave in the floor of Congress, when he basically was like, I'm an anarchist and you should too?
Yeah, that was so amazing. I had to play excerpts of that for my wife, and we were both just sitting there with our mouths open, like, holy smokes, did he really just say that? And I had to wonder, is he reading my stuff? Because some of those phrases are exactly what I say. That was amazing. I actually want to do a video with putting together some excerpts, because that was, I mean, it amazed me. He basically said, yeah, the political process doesn't do it. People have to figure this out. People have to understand freedom for themselves. Government does not fix it. Fixing government doesn't fix society. And you know, all the things he said that were just so darn close to just saying, heck with government, it's a joke, be free. I mean,
right.
Yeah, it was in that talk, wasn't it, where he just came right out and said, basically, government shouldn't initiate force in any situation which we shouldn't. I mean, it shouldn't use force in any situation which we shouldn't, which that makes the whole notion of government disappear. But the fact that...
the modern conception of it.
Yeah, yeah. And there can be something drastically different, and if somebody wants to call it government, you know, I won't argue too much. But yeah, and the fact that... And he... Ron Paul just amazes me. You know, he's still a statist as far as just barely a statist. But the fact that he's lived in the belly of the beast for how many years and he still dares to say things like that. I mean, most people, they're there for 20 minutes and either they run away screaming or they turn into completely bought off, corrupt, power happy lunatics. And
I think it's pretty safe to say that Ron Paul is a badass.
Yep. I would say so.
Favorite government thug, to steal a line from Michael W. Dean.
Yep.
So we had a couple of questions we wanted to ask you ahead of time, just in case we ran out of material, which hasn't happened. But there is a couple here that we would like you to speak on, because we think that our experiences give you a unique viewpoint on them, as opposed to most people. you were once a tax protester, and your opinion is not paying the tax man something people should aspire to, something kind of like a civil disobedience, or maybe from some other viewpoint, not participating in or fueling immorality. What's your point of view on that?
Well, here's the thing. Unfortunately, there's about 80 times as much misinformation about what I did and why than there is correct information, including from people who support me. What I actually did was completely based on what their stupid, bogus, deceptive law books say. I didn't do it as a philosophical thing or as a protest. I totally respect people who say, I'm not paying for your war machine, nay, nay, poo-poo. That isn't what I did. It wasn't, you know, what I did wasn't a protest. It was saying, hey, you guys are totally lying about what your own law says, and I can prove it. And people say, well, why bother doing that, like, if you don't even believe in law anymore? Because I was already an anarchist by then and already knew the whole game was a joke. My only hope was that statists might care if they found out that the control freaks taking their money weren't even doing it inside their own rules. They had to break their own rules to rob the people. As it turns out, the peasantry didn't really care. They didn't care what the rules say. Apparently, they like being robbed. So in my case, it wasn't any sort of philosophical thing. It wasn't a protest. Again, I totally support people who actually do that, who just say, I'm not paying for this. It funds evil. That isn't what my case actually was. However, it does put me in sort of a weird situation where I get to tell people, you know, if you support taxation for anything, military, welfare, whatever else, you're saying that you want me to be threatened with being caged unless I pay for whatever you think would be a good idea. And people invariably say, well, come on, you wouldn't be caged for it. And I get to say, I already was caged for it for a year. And
in a way, that's kind of a privilege, really, because I make that argument from time to time with people, and their response is always something like, you know, like you said, nuh-uh, you wouldn't be in a cage, or nuh-uh, people with guns wouldn't come to your door and carry you off, or, you know.
Right, and I get to say, but, well, actually, a dozen armed thugs invaded my home in May of 2003, stole the videos I made about the income tax laws, never said they were illegal, never even alleged they were illegal, just did an armed invasion in my home and stole a bunch of stuff, and then they prosecuted me and put me in a cage and harassed everybody I knew and publicly demonized me and lied about me. And so, yeah, it wasn't fun to go through that, but it's convenient to be able to tell people, look, this is the system you advocated. What they did to me was what you told them to do to me. You voted for the people you knew were going to do this to anybody who didn't pay. Now, the reason I didn't pay wasn't a philosophical thing, but the reason doesn't matter. You don't do as you're told. I mean, and mine was misdemeanor, willful failure to file. It wasn't even tax evasion. They didn't even pretend I lied about anything or hid anything. I went to them and said, I'm not filing, and this is why. And so there's this, I mean, that whole story is just this giant, ridiculous experience. It's all in a book I wrote called Kicking the Dragon. It's a huge book. It's an ebook on my website. It's too huge to print. It's like 488 pages, so it wasn't worth it to print it because I'd have to charge $1 million. But that whole story, and a lot of people who ended up with the philosophical side said following that story actually helped a whole lot. Even though it was just inside the game of legalese and their court system, because it was a very, you know, an eye-opening thing for people. And I said from the beginning, look, I may lose. I'm going to be open and honest. And by the way, everybody else, don't do what I'm doing. This is not a safe thing to do. I literally ran full-page ads inviting them to prosecute me for years until they finally did. And I told people, wow, don't do what I'm doing. I'm not trying to stay out of trouble. I'm not trying to pretend that I have some magic way to stay out of trouble. I'm going to be open and honest. Hopefully I win in the end. But whether I do or not, I'm going to make them lie, cheat, and steal all over the place. And if you watch, it'll be worth it. And so, and I did. And they lied and cheated.
We're professionals.
Yeah. And they, so many ridiculous things that they had to do, so many things they had to lie about and cheat. And because they, well, I won't even get into the legal thing of in court, what they're supposed to have to do is prove that I believed I was required to file. And they so cheated, like literally, they didn't let me play record it. They didn't let me show the jury anything I'd ever written or said prior to stepping into that courtroom. I'm supposed to prove here's what I believe, but guess what? I'm not allowed to show you anything I ever said or play the recordings of the meetings with the IRS or any of that. Anyway, the story is this giant, ridiculous look into what the system really is, which is brute force by a bunch of thugs. And a lot of people tell me that following that story really brought them to the realization that government has nothing to do with law and rules and order. It's just a gang of thugs and nothing else. Everything else is for show. The whole court system, the legal system, the whole process of writing laws and regulations, it's all a cover to make it not look like what they are, which is a gang of thugs.
You would say that government is, you know, it's basically this giant facade of legitimacy behind a bunch of really carnal stuff that no one wants to talk about. So it's like the stories in Playboy. Yeah, you know, it's not actually what it's about, but they put it in there to make it look better.
Right. So they pile on their propaganda, and you see underneath. Oh, here's what it's really about. Okay, yeah, interesting analogy.
Yeah.
Did we bring up the surprise yet, or do we have one more question?
Oh, but no, we have a little more time. We got okay. 1 minute left. So I was going to ask a follow on. So when we're talking about taxes and stuff, obviously the big taxes is the federal income tax, and you get taxed more if you make more money. So one of the things we were talking about pre-show, they wanted to get your ideas on. There's a Doug Casey speech not too long ago that we played some excerpts from on a previous show, and he talked about one of the best things you can do for the liberty movement in general is make a lot of money. He advocated be really successful, be somebody who has some level of ability to move away from the government if it gets really bad, or to just contribute a lot to other people, help other people out if necessary, whatever you want to do with the money. But he advocated making a lot of money. Whereas you can also take the other approach, which is you play the minimalist and make so little money you never have to pay any taxes. So you can just say, oh, I don't fund it. I don't fund this stuff. So
yeah.
what would you say? Are you partial to one side of the argument or the other? Do you think they're both good things to do?
I think they're both good. I ended up in the latter because they robbed me blind. And now, I made a conscious decision that what money I would make off of annoying the state. And now I live on book sales, which have actually been pretty darn good recently. But, not Stephen King good or anything, but, we're not starving to death. But I've been pretty dang poor for years. And yeah, I totally agree that, Doug Casey, I think he made that at Libertopia when I was there. And yeah, if people can get rich and be successful and look respectable and stuff and spread these ideas, that's outstanding. And so I don't suggest that people do what I did. In fact, even when I was doing, I was saying, hey, everybody else, don't do this. But watch and pay attention and see what you can learn from it. So yeah,
well,
I don't
watch.
Right. And, so yeah, I don't actually advocate that everybody do what I did and get thrown in a cage and robbed into poverty. Because it would, of course, it's a lot better if you can be successful and comfortable while trying to get, nudge the world in the right direction. But this is how it turned out for me. Oh, well.
So I guess as a follow up to that, this is a big problem for, I know a lot of some of our co-hosts, a lot of listeners and just general people in general. It's so hard now. It's almost impossible to be involved in a way of making money that doesn't have some sort of the state tentacles and wrapped in it. I mean, one of our hosts, Toasty Time, is going to be a teacher. I mean, you can teach in a private school or you can do tutoring and stuff, but it's much harder. And quite frankly, you still have the state in trying its tentacles and telling you what you can and can't do to an extent. And there's a licensing and all that stuff. So, the state gets involved with that. The state's really involved with any of the technology fields, the defense sector. It's everywhere. So if you want to make a lot of money, sometimes you have to balance between you want to get your hands dirty, how dirty are you, at what point are you not being beneficial to other people and you're being a leech off the system. So what are your thoughts on that kind of stuff?
Yeah, there's always that balancing act. And some people even say, apply for every government program you can possibly get to leech away from them all the resources you can get. And I sort of understand that. I've gone in the other direction and kind of paid dearly for it, where I don't want anything from them. Basically, if I could take back 100,000 or whatever it was that they stole from me in total without their consent, I would do it. But if they said, we'll send you a check, I'd say, I don't want it. I don't want their cooperation. I want it back without their cooperation. But of course, it isn't back. You know, it's everything they get is gone 2 seconds later. So I sort of sympathize with both sides. And yeah, there are lots of people who have to play a lot of their game to do anything. Now, I think there is a line, you know, if your job is making bombs that blow up little kids on the other side of the world, yeah, don't do that. That's really bad. But like you said, it's really hard to do much of anything without, in one way or another, you know, having some at least indirect involvement in the beast. And a big one is just if you make money and they withhold money and it goes to feed the beast, that's a tough balance. I fix it by being really dang poor, but it's not a very fun solution and it's not something I suggest for everybody. And then there, you know, people have to decide what level of risk they're willing to do, because some people are very successful and they play the game and play by the rules while trying to be successful and spreading the ideas. Whereas other people say, I'm not going to do anything that feeds them. I'd rather live in a shack somewhere. I really think it's just sort of a personal thing. And people, like, I could see somebody who makes $1 million and pays tons of money to the government, but spread these ideas and ultimately is a bigger cost to the control freaks than they got from him. And so I think in the long run, spreading the ideas and getting more people to wake up is a lot more important than whether they get a pile of dollars from you today. But I also, you know, I've defaulted on the side of I want them to get nothing from me. And right, you know, for a few years, they've gotten nothing from me because I'm so dang poor that even they know I don't owe them anything. But it's a toss up, and I sympathize either way. And I think if somebody is in the position where they kind of at least feel bad about, like, I don't want to help the machine, after that point, I would sort of trust their judgment. It's the people who just don't care. They're about the only ones I would criticize. Oh, I don't mind if I'm paying money and it's, you know, shooting little kids on the other side of the world. I don't really care. I'm rich. I'm comfortable. If people actually care, if people care enough to think about it, then I sort of think beyond that, it's a personal decision and you have to just decide where the balance is. It's people who just don't care that they're the problem. If everybody was in the position of saying, you know, how can I withhold as much as I can from the state without starving myself? You know, there wouldn't be a state next week. So, you know, it's a personal thing.
Yeah. And what you said, I mean, certainly being one of the sides of those two things where you're making not enough money to have to pay them, it's kind of the silver lining to poverty, I guess, in a sense, is that you don't, you know, when you have these principles, you're like, you get the peace of mind knowing that you're not supporting the state or the killing people overseas and all that stuff. But one thing we like to do, and I guess as a way to transition to it, I know you said you and your wife didn't originally, you know, start out anarchists. I mean, we all are kind of born this way, as you mentioned. These are kind of 5-year-old thoughts, but you weren't always there. But at the end of the show, when we have guests, we love to do what we call bizarro mode, where we say, hey, can you go into that mindset, or at least, you know, something contrary to your point of view, and basically take a position you hold dear and debate against it, you know, play devil's advocate. what would you say to, like, convince you or former you that you had to pay those taxes or any other subject thing? Like, what's something you wrestle with, I guess, is what we like to do with bizarro mode.
Okay, this is funny because I do this myself all the time. Okay, bizarro old statist me. Old statist me says, let's see. The trouble is, I know it's going to be complete bunk, but let me see how convincing I can make it. Old statist me says, okay, well, there's, you know, you don't support everything they do, but aren't it stupid, though? You don't support everything they do, but it's too dumb. If we all chip in and then we decide as a society the things we need, that way we can better collectively fund things than we would be able to do individually. Like, having a military, we need a big military to protect us from all the scary invaders out there. And if they made taxes optional and you could just choose not to pay, then, well, lots of people would choose not to, and we wouldn't have a military and we'd get invaded and it would be way worse. So there. So you should be forced to pay for a military. There. That's the best thing.
You're too good at what you do. It's hard to switch that around sometimes. Huh?
I was laughing the whole time in the background.
That's great.
That was pretty funny.
That's part of the fun of it too.
Yes, I think we're almost out of time here. So I'll just get one last time. If you want to plug any YouTube videos or anything new coming out, books.
Well, you can find on in the LarkinRose.com on the store. He's got books. There's an audiobook, there's a video, there's an ebook. All helps him kind of support the message. And then, you know, we're looking forward to, you said in April too, there's an event, right?
Yeah, up in New York, there's a big thing. I don't even know all that much about it, but I committed to going, even though I hate New York as a general rule, never go there, but I said I would this time. The most important thing I've ever written is my book, The Most Dangerous Superstition, which literally took me 15 years to write it. I held off until I thought I could do the best job I could possibly do. And I've been thrilled by how many people, it's like 200 pages. It's not a huge book, by how many people have told me they read that and in one reading, their whole view of reality completely turned upside down. And that's what I was hoping, but I didn't even dare to hope that this many people would be saying that about it. So I'd say if you want to uncomfortably have your paradigms demolished and you're still sort of in the mainstream statist mindset, I strongly encourage people to read The Most Dangerous Superstition. Or if you want the free version, go to YouTube and watch some of the videos there and see some of the fun arguments that happen underneath them. And there's lots and lots of free stuff at LarkinRose.com, a gazillion articles and links to the videos and all that.
And that's for the people that aren't there yet.
Right, who aren't there yet. And that's always the challenge, is it's easy and fun to talk to the choir and preach to the choir, but we really have to get to all the people who think they're advocating the right thing, who think they're the good guys, who think they're on the right side and are inadvertently advocating the enslavement of mankind. And don't even know it. And
they
kind of are the ones we need to target and wake up. And the good news is they're not malicious. They're not trying to be evil. They've just been taught a set of mythology and superstitions that's completely bogus. And if they can be shown that their superstitions and assumptions are acting against what they actually want the world to be, then they can actually pay attention and fix things. Because people don't want mass suffering and violence. They've just been led to believe that government equals civilization. And it's the exact opposite of the truth. So try to wake them up and see.
Exactly. That's why I'm a little bit interested in having some of those prominent statists or people outside our community on our show. We're branching that way a little bit.
Yeah, that's always fun. I love having debates, but people usually just freak out and run away. That's the important discussion that has to happen. All the people who imagine that their statism is for the good of humanity. And if they can be shown it isn't, then a lot of people will give it up because they're trying to support what's good and righteous and moral. They just have no idea what that is because their indoctrination is turn their brains inside out. And the goal is to turn them right side in again.
All right, everybody, I think unfortunately we're out of time for today, so thank you so much for coming on for this Anarchy Hour.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Yeah, and Ron, you want to take us out?
Yeah, let's do it, Eternal. It's a little after 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 8 p.m. Pacific on this January 2nd, 2013. We welcome any fans of Larkin to check out Decline to State as we continue to spread the message on either declinefm.com or Decline to State on iTunes. And I would like to remind you all that Decline to State is still brought to you free of charge, as well as paid advertisement free. And a big thanks to all of our hosts, tech experts, researchers, contributors, and of course, Larkin Rose for being generous with his time and joining us today. Decline to State is a group effort motivated by our love of liberty, as well as capitalist bow ties and free market monocles. So remember, when asked, always decline to state. This is Ron McPaul saying Happy New Year.
This is Eternal. Happy New Year as well. Hope you enjoyed the show, guys.
Wrong opinion here. Happy New Year, everyone. Enjoy your snow. I hope you have a safe night and the rest of the week.